Now a warning that being in KiwiSaver alone doesn't mean you're sorted when it comes to retirement. In its latest briefing, the Commission for Financial Capability is underscoring the need for pensioners to stretch their money through retirement to avoid blowing their savings early on. And in one of its proposed changes to the retirement savings scheme, it suggests drip-feeding portions of your KiwiSaver through the years ahead. Meanwhile, David Boyle, who now works for a private investment firm but previously has been with the Commission for Financial Capability, says hundreds of thousands of dollars are already being lost by many people before they retire. That's because they're either in the wrong fund or because they're in KiwiSaver but not making contributions. The comments and advice comes amidst a three-year review and public discussion about retirement policy. Also up for debate is whether people who can't afford a home in a major city should be allowed to use their KiwiSaver money to buy a home elsewhere to help them get onto the property ladder. Submissions close on the 31st of October and can be made through the Commission for Financial Capability's website. Well, with us to discuss, we welcome the Interim Retirement Commissioner, Peter Cordetz, who's overseeing the 2019 review. Morning, Peter.
Kia ora, Catherine.
And Mint Asset Management's David Boyle. Morning, David.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
Really good. Thanks very much. Peter, what are you highlighting here when it comes to the adequacy of retirement saving?
Well, look, this is a three-year exercise. Actually, David and I were both involved in the previous one in 2016. And every 3 years, the Retirement Commissioner is asked to review the effectiveness of current policy settings on helping New Zealanders arrive at retirement in good shape and live comfortable retirements. So the the terms of reference are very broad. There's the usual themes around sustainability, long-term affordability, but we're also being asked to consider issues like vulnerability and equity alongside that.
What are you seeing, though? What are you seeing happening with the length of people's retirements versus the adequacy of their savings in conjunction with their pension? Is it just not enough for a growing number of people?
Increasingly, that's the case. People are living longer. There are groups who have, still issues around lower life expectancy, which is why the discussion at times around age of eligibility is a little fraught. But we know that in the main, people are living longer. So making whatever they are able to accumulate across the course of their working life stretch further and enable that well-being. Is a really important part of the puzzle.
How are you aware and how do you quantify a shortage beginning to appear for some people?
In this housing piece, which is the latest piece that we're engaging on, one of the things that we know is that around 12% of New Zealanders aged 65 plus now are renting. And in the last 6 years alone, the accommodation supplements available to 65 plus renters has increased by 92% just in the last 6 years, from 2013 to this year. And that number's only going one way. More New Zealanders are arriving at retirement, either still servicing a mortgage or renting. And that's why declining home ownership is one of the areas that we've been asked to look at this year.
So that doesn't add up, does it? The real pressures that are reportedly being felt in retirement is where you don't have your own mortgage-free home. That has long been the received wisdom. Do you concur?
Yes, absolutely.
And are you seeing a growing proportion and likely an increasingly growing proportion of people getting to retirement without that asset and cost covered off?
Yeah, look, well, there's some conjecture around to what extent home ownership has declined. I think most of the, not just data, but people's experience of home ownership is fairly clear. I guess the other thing that the other backdrop for that in terms of having housing sorted by the time you arrive at 65. In terms of the big numbers, New Zealand superannuation as a universal benefit for those who reach 65 currently costs us $39 million a day. And now that sounds like a lot, and it is a lot, but at $411 a week for a single person, it's $633 for a couple. it assumes you've got housing sorted by the time you've arrived there.
Otherwise, that's pretty much gone on the rent. All right. Let's look at the length of retirement issue. What are you advising about people managing the savings they've got? We're hoping there's a house. We're hoping that there's some savings as well to supplement the pension. And what are you saying about the need to manage this over quite a long period? What's the advice?
Again, David was involved in this piece of work.
Well, pick up, David. Tell us about it.
Can I just make just a couple of comments? The housing question is, to me, a bit of distraction when we're talking about KiwiSaver. We've, I kind of look at KiwiSaver a bit like my school report, and it would be something like could do better. And the reason for that is that when you look at it on the outside, you've got 2.9 million members, which sounds pretty good, 60 billion of funds under management, and 39,000 New Zealanders applied and got their first home buyer funds to go into their home. The problem that we have, though, and it's been there since I was involved with the review back in 2016, is contribution rates, those not contributing, is growing. We've got 1.2 million New Zealanders that are members of that scheme not contributing at all, and then we've got to find out why that is. I think we also need to understand a little bit more around making sure that employers are doing what they should be and paying it on top of their KiwiSaver contribution. And you've got a lot of New Zealanders also reaching retirement and wondering what they should do with that money afterwards as well. And the last point that I think is a real issue, and it still hasn't been addressed, and thankfully MB is doing a truckload of work engaging with the industry to look at what default providers do and the default fund. You've got 400,000 New Zealanders that have not made an active choice. They're sitting in a conservative fund, and that's costing them tens of thousands of dollars of income in retirement.
So is what you're saying, I must admit, that wisdom about the house, if you've got the house paid off, that tended to relate to pension adequacy, didn't it? And was probably pre a couple of housing booms and all the costs attendant to that, and actually pre KiwiSaver. Are you saying a more contemporary way to look at it is, house or no house, you need to be maximising those KiwiSaver savings or those investment savings?
Oh, totally. The problem that we have is a lot of New Zealanders have been defaulted. So they've ticked, they think in their mind, the box, and they're all okie dokie. Of course, they're not going to be. Comparing someone at a similar age that's in a conservative fund compared to a balanced fund and doing just 3% could mean the difference of around $80,000 at the end, or an income that they could draw down is going to be reduced. So we've got to get the fundamentals right. The housing, and I'm sorry, Pete, my view around using KiwiSaver as a first home buyer investment, it's just going to cause...
You're against that.
Look, I am.
KiwiSaver was set up to supplement retirement income. It was not set up to fund your house. And yes, you can argue if it gets you into a house and you get your house paid off, then you're in a better situation. But do you believe things have gone too far, David?
I think the risk is that KiwiSaver is being seen as the silver bullet to help
everything.
New Zealanders' housing problem.
Yeah.
And it's definitely not. And until we get some of these other fundamental things right, and I really hope that, and I'm pretty sure the government of the day is really looking at ways to improve this. And this is up to providers as well to make a difference. But we really need to look and understand why people aren't saving at the moment, and why we've still got 600,000 New Zealanders not in KiwiSaver.
Well, you're in a vicious cycle where they're not saving, many of them, because they're only just making their accommodation and living costs, David.
And that highlights the point that around trying to get using KiwiSaver to get into your first home from an investment perspective is only going to create more inflationary issues around housing. And we've got to get the fundamentals right around helping New Zealanders get affordable housing. And KiwiSaver, and you hit the nail on the head, KiwiSaver is and has always been established for supplementing New Zealanders' lifestyle once they finish work and improving their overall well-being. Because as Peter said, you know, we are living longer. And if you look on the Sorted website, which is a great tool to go and have a play around with, it gives you a very good idea around what you will end up with, not what you've got today.
David, what is happening with this business of the default funds? We've done stories on this. There are a lot of people extremely agitated about the dominance of the big four providers. I think they have the privilege of people essentially being allocated into their funds. They sit on default and have little incentive really to push things along.
Yep.
There were proposals, for example, that if you hadn't actively, as a fund holder, if you haven't actively said, yes, I want to be in this fund or that fund or another fund after 2 years, that the government would just actually move you. And there's some clear guidelines about where you should be according to your age. Has there been any kind of movement at all on that?
Oh, look, can I share with you kind of my... this is the feedback that Mint and myself have contributed to MBS request, because if we don't make a change now, we'll be going back for another review in 4 years' time and be in the same position. So, and some of these are a little bit left of centre, but I think we're at a time where we do need to make some significant changes. The first thing, which you touched on, is the default providers. I'm recommending that New Zealand providers are all eligible to provide a default fund, so that then those members, new members, can be shared across all providers that are interested to help New Zealanders get started in KiwiSaver. The second one is, as I touched on, the default fund and what they're calling the parking space is a conservative fund. Now, for most New Zealanders, they won't know what that is, but what it really means is that you've got 80% of your money sitting in cash and bonds. Now, we know where interest rates have been going, and they've only been going down, so the returns on these funds are not going to get you to a healthy retirement. So my recommendation is having a balanced fund as default fund for future members, and for those members that are still in the default fund, that 400,000 I touched on, if they don't make an active choice, their future contributions can go into the balanced fund, and that'll nudge them up the risk return area and will hopefully give them a better outcome without doing too much around having to actively do something to get started. The other thing is, if default providers have not been in a position, I know how hard it was, because I managed the ANZ KiwiSaver schemes, and we had four of them when I was there, to get those default members to be connected, perhaps sharing them around if they can't, and reallocated to new default funds by those providers would be really important. And the last point that I really, really hope, and maybe it's something that the Commission can lead, is actually do some proper research around how New Zealanders are being employed. What I'm saying about that is that when KiwiSaver was introduced, it should be on top of your contribution, so your employer contribution. So I'm putting in three, your employer puts in three, but you know as well as I do, Catherine, that a lot of New Zealanders are employed by contract now, or they're choosing, or employers are choosing to put their staff on contract, and they're not required to actually make KiwiSaver contributions.
Well, you can have one or the other. You can have KiwiSaver or you can have the cash, but you can't have both.
Yeah, and you know, I think...
But David, the problem with that is that's an attractive option to someone trying to get on top of a mortgage, again, isn't it?
Yes.
And so it's a question of how much you should be able to direct the decisions that people might quite rationally be making, saying, if I can pay down my mortgage faster, I'm going to way outstrip in debt repayment what I might be getting on KiwiSaver less fees.
Well, perhaps, but look where mortgage rates are now. You can get a fixed rate term for 3.5% for a year. KiwiSaver, even the conservative funds have been sitting around 6 to 7%. So over the long term, it's not saying one's better than the other. It's about making sure that you've got, for your own personal circumstances, the right savings habit, but also getting your debt levels
down
as well.
Can I ask you, just, I'll come back to you in a moment, Peter, but can I ask you first of all about this business of the privilege that certain funds have in being default funds and therefore having customers basically land on their plates? John Cliff et al., we interviewed them a while ago, had calculated that default members had missed out on something like $830 million dollars. They had gone through a calculation over a period of time just by virtue of the fact that they had been sitting in the wrong fund.
Yep.
And also pointed the finger at MB and, I think, the FMA in not having done more to counter this, the conservative fund strategy that was introduced in 2014. Is this what you're saying now, that that policy and the way the default funds operate ought to be fundamentally changed? And if so, how?
So, look, going back to 2007, 12 years ago, we were right on the doorstep of the financial credit crisis. And, look, the government of the day decided to put it, had the default fund as a conservative fund because of the perhaps capital risk that could occur through that period of time. I don't recall, and I was there right at the beginning when KiwiSaver was established, that it was deemed to be a parking space. That parking space comment came when the next review occurred. If you ask any provider, default or not, what the original fund that we wanted New Zealanders to land in, if they made no choice, would be a balanced fund. And that's essentially what happens in Australia. So,
the second thing, though, that they identified was, and they called it the failure of the default fund providers, particularly the original default providers, to meet their obligation to switch members out of the default funds. Was there ever such an obligation? They argue this was meant to be temporary holding funds for default KiwiSaver members.
There would be instances, I'm sure, where some New Zealanders would only want to have a conservative fund because they've never experienced managed funds or investments before. I do know, being I was head of a default provider scheme, that the information in those early days that providers received was actually very poor. We spent hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to actually get the most up-to-date records of those individuals so we could actually help them. But the noise of life, when it comes down to people looking at their KiwiSaver and to trying to grab a moment for them to decide what they should do, it's really hard.
All right.
I mean, and we underestimate that.
All right. Can I ask each of you about your views on annuities. Now, there's at least one provider of these in the market already. Peter, you're talking about the need to manage your savings over a potentially long period of time. Do you have a view on the pros and cons of taking an annuity option?
Well, look, we're still landing much of the research that's been commissioned to inform the various parts of the terms of reference for this year's review. Decumulation was a part of that, and David can remember back in 2016 how difficult it was to even have discussions about decumulation because nobody knew what it meant.
And just explain what it means.
Well, you know, and it is exactly what you said, how you drip feed your what you've
but you
accumulated
hand your fund over to a company, basically, that promises it will pay you till the day you depart. However, what are the pros and cons of considering such a scheme?
Well, in annuities, I guess, is a relatively is foreign landscape for New Zealanders. And I guess the universality of super is one of those reasons it has been. One of the ideas that's being proposed as part of the work we're doing in this space is a Kiwi spend model. So, you know, where you've already got Kiwi Saver helping people accumulate a potentially government supported annuity option that allows you to, I guess, use your KiwiSaver, what you have accumulated in KiwiSaver, across the course of your
retirement. So you're talking about a state-operated annuity in
rather than having a third party
who may or may not go bust, by the way, over a period of time.
It's just one of the ideas that's been floated with the proposals that we've sought. But look, the bit that David and I are in absolute agreement on is the real challenge for people right now is not the decumulation phase, it's accumulation. You know, it's what they're building up over the course of their lifetime. In fact, David and I tag-teamed a bunch of KiwiSaver myth-busting events back in the day, partly because the parts of the community in my day job across the last 4 years of being at the commission in the community space, dealing with those parts of the community who are largely disengaged around KiwiSaver, certainly not maximising it, might struggle to tell you who their provider was, let alone let alone whether they're in the right plan for their stage of life.
A little bit of annual proactivity by a bank saying, hey, here's a fact sheet on where your policy is at. If you like more information, do this. Would it be that hard for the bank to prompt?
Oh, look, part of it for mine, and my default setting, I guess, is the space that I've worked across. And David and I did used to collaborate a lot because there was a long around that transition, I guess, from getting people engaged about KiwiSaver, then understanding how to maximise their return from it. In terms of the priorities for people as they prepare for retirement, for a lot of those communities who are consumed with the urgency of now, thinking about locking their funds up in something they don't get access to till 65 just doesn't seem real or relevant to them.
Hey, National has pledged to raise the New Zealand superannuation age from 65 to 67, starting in 2037. That has always been perceived as a risky political proposal. Do you approve of it, Peter? What's your view?
Oh, it was one of the recommendations made back in 2016. One of the things we've taken some care with this time around is that people don't get distracted by it. You know, it is always one of those options that's available alongside things like means testing in terms of the long-term affordability of super. But when you're trying to consider vulnerability and equity at the same time, if we become anchored in a discussion about the age of eligibility, then it does take our eyes off the broader issues. Those accumulation issues and the sorts of communities I was talking about.
But your position is, yes, that would be a good move, your official position is. Your predecessor's position was that, is it yours?
And I'll have an official position by December when we land this report.
Thank you. Peter Cordance, the Interim Retirement Commissioner. Thanks also to Mint Asset Management's David Boyle, who previously also worked for the Commission for Financial Capability.